Let's pick up where we left off in the book of Micah. And for those of you who weren't here last Thursday, Micah was a prophet that prophesied around 750 B.C., around that time, specifically around 750, 730 B.C. He was one of those prophets that just stood up in the midst of his generation that was so godless and ungodly, and they had become steeped in all kinds of immorality and injustice and exploitation of other people. And you know, he just really came down on his people. And I think that what we need today is we need Micahs in every pulpit of this land, as far as I'm concerned today, because this is our only hope. Because if we don't listen to what's being said here, I think the consequences are going to be just, it's going to be deja vu. Everything that God did to his people back then, he's going to do to us, to this nation. There's no doubt in my mind about it. Because Micah warned what was going to happen and why it was going to happen. And he was quite a prophet. I mean, he was one who even predicted where Christ would be born. But he, like many of the Old Testament prophets, the major prophets, minor prophets, he would predict a near judgment, a near future judgment on Israel or Jerusalem or God's people, and then he would extend his judgments to the whole world, to the end of the world, to Christ's return. I mean, this is what these prophets would do time and time again. Anyway, beginning with this verse 1 in chapter 2, Micah writes, "Woe to those who scheme iniquity, who work out evil on their beds. When morning comes, they do it, for it is within their power of their hands. They covet fields and then seize them, and houses and take them away. They rob a man and his house, and a man and his inheritance. Therefore, thus saith the Lord, behold, I am planning against this family a calamity for which you cannot remove your necks, and you will not walk haughtily, for it will be an evil time. On that day they will take up against you a taunt and utter a bitter lamentation and say, we are completely destroyed. He exchanges the portion of my people, now he removes it from me. To the apostate he apportions our fields. Therefore you will have no one stretching a measuring line for you by lot in the assembly of the Lord." Now, let me just back up a little bit. He starts off the sentence, this verse 1, with woe, and I've mentioned it many times. Whenever that word woe is used, I mean, this is the Holy Spirit speaking. I mean, woe means, in essence, tragedy, calamity, devastation, ruin, destruction. I mean, there's no other word that really conveys this type of judgment, this type of punishment that God's talking about. He says, woe to those who scheme iniquity on their beds, who work out an evil on their beds. I mean, if you look at what's happening today, I mean, just like it was in the day of Noah, every imagination of the hearts of man was continually evil. And you look at all the cons that are going around, for example, all the schemes. I mean, this is happening all over the place where people are just being lied to and swindled and cheated, especially older people, elderly people, people who are dependent upon their Social Security and whatnot. They are being called up day and night by solicitors or people who claim to be contractors saying, hey, your roof is leaking, this is happening, or, you know, you need a new this or that or whatever. And they're taking people to the cleaners. This is what he's talking about here. Woe to those who scheme iniquity, who work out an evil on their beds. I mean, if that was the case in Micah's day, it most certainly is the case in our day. He says, when morning comes, they do it, for it is in their power of their hands. You know, they're in a position to exploit other people, to take advantage of other people, to lie and steal and flim-flam other people. It's in their power to do so. I don't care whether they're judges or politicians. I mean, we're seeing it all over this country. He says, they covet fields and then seize them and houses and take them away and rob a man of his house and a man of his inheritance. Therefore, thus says the Lord, behold, I'm planning against this family a calamity for which they cannot remove their necks, and you will not walk haughtily, for it will be an evil time. Interesting thing. It says here, they covet fields and they seize them. In the book of Kings, there is an account. If you remember Ahab and his notoriously wicked wife Jezebel, let me just read you this account and see how it fits in with what Michael's saying here. I won't read the whole chapter, but it says, now
where
it came.
Are you reading it from?
From 1 Kings chapter 21.
Thank you.
Okay, it says, now it came about after these things that Naboth the Jezreelite had a vineyard which was in Jezreel beside the palace of King Ahab, the king of Samaria. And Ahab spoke to Naboth, saying, give me your vineyard that I may have it for a vegetable garden, because it is close beside my house, and I will give you a better vineyard that is in its place. If you like, I will give you the price of the price in money. But Naboth said to Ahab, the Lord forbid me that I should give you the inheritance of my father. So Ahab came into his house, sullen and vexed because of the word of Naboth the Jezreelite had spoken to him. For he said, I will not give you the inheritance of my fathers. And he lay down on his bed and turned away his face and ate no food. And he's sulking. He coveted another guy's field. So now he says this, but Jezebel, his wife, came in to him and said to him, how is it that your spirit is so sullen and that you are not eating food? So he said to her, because I spoke to Naboth the Jezreelite, and he said to me, give me, and said to him, give me your vineyard for money, or else if it pleases you, I will give you a vineyard in its place. But he said, I will not give you my vineyard. And Jezebel, his wife, said to him, do you now reign over Israel? Arise, eat bread, let your heart be joyful. I will give you the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite. So she wrote letters in Ahab's name and sealed them with his seal and sent letters to the elders and to the nobles who were living in Naboth's city. Sent them to the elders and the nobles. Okay, these are the leaders of the city. She wrote in the letters saying, quote, proclaim a fast and set Naboth at the head of the people. And set two worthless men before him and let them testify against him, saying, you curse God and the king. Then take him out and stone him to death.
Oh, God.
So the men of the city and the elders and the nobles who lived in his city did as Jezebel had sent word to them, just as it is written in the letters which she had sent them. They proclaimed a fast and seated Naboth at the head of the people. Then two worthless men came in and sat before him, and the worthless men testified against him, even against Naboth, before the people, saying, Naboth cursed God and the king. So they took him outside the city and stoned him to death with stones. And they sent word to Jezebel, saying, Naboth has been stoned and is dead. And it came about when Jezebel heard that Naboth had been stoned and was dead, that Jezebel said to Ahab, arise, take possession of the vineyard of Naboth and the Jezreelite, which he refused to give you for money. For Naboth is not alive, but is dead. All right, that just shows you. Now, it just wasn't just one wicked woman that was behind this. Mm-hmm. It was the elders of the city that mm-hmm. went along with this wicked deed. Mm-hmm. Now, it's saying here, back in Micah, they covet fields and they seize them and the horses and take them and houses and take them away, and they rob a man of his inheritance. In other words, this is a classic example of what Micah was talking about here. Well, we see it today. I mean, the way people are exploiting other people, robbing from other people, stealing from other people, and especially people who are, you know, in positions of power mm-hmm. where they can get away with stuff. And verse 3 says, therefore, thus saith the Lord, behold, I am planning against his family a calamity for which you cannot remove your necks, and you will not walk haughtily, for it will be an evil time. Now, it's just imagine, so you stop and try to imagine. Can Israel of old during Micah's day be worse than we are today? I can't for the life of me imagine it. For one reason is that in our day and age, the potential for evil is 1,000 times greater today than it was back in Micah's day. Simply because of our technology and everything else that we've got going for us, right?
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, hey, if God did not spare Israel for all their wickedness, how in the world is going to, you know, are we going to escape? Mm-hmm. He says in verse 4, on that day they will take up against you a taunt and utter a bitter lamentation and say, we are completely destroyed. He exchanges the portion of my people, how he removes it from me. To the apostate he apportions our field. In other words, they're going to say at that time that God is just going to take away their land, take away their houses, take away their fields. They are going to go into exile. They are going to be slain with a sword. Their children are going to be incarcerated away. And their land that they coveted of other people, and they did everything they could to lie, cheat, steal, and get other people's property, is going to go to the apostate. In other words, it's going to go to the Gentiles. They're going to overrun you, take away your land. Mm-hmm. It's poetic justice. And verse 5, therefore you will have no one to stretch out a measuring line. For you by lot in the assembly of the Lord. In other words, you're going to have nobody to inherit what you have. Nobody to stretch out a measuring line. In other words, everything that you have, everything that you've lied, cheat, and steal to accumulate in this life is going to be taken away from you, and you're going to have nobody to give it to. There's going to be nobody who's going to inherit your wealth because it's all going to be robbed from you, stolen from you by the Assyrians, which it was. And verse 6 says, do not speak out, so they speak out. But if they do not speak out concerning these things, reproaches will not be turned back. It is being said, O house of Jacob, is the spirit of the Lord impatient? Are these his doings? Do not my words do good to those walking upright? Recently, my people have arisen as an enemy. You stripped the robe off a fellow Israelite and from the unsuspecting passers-by and those returning from war. The women of my people you evict, each one from her pleasant house. From her children you take my splendor forever. Arise, go, for this is no place of rest because of the uncleanliness that brings on destruction, a painful destruction. If a man walking after wind and falsehood has told lies and said, I will speak out to you concerning wine and liquor, he would be spokesman to these people. I will surely assemble all of you, Jacob. I will surely gather the remnant of Israel. I will put them together like sheep in the fold, like flock in the midst of this pasture, and they will be noisy with men. The breakers go up before them. They break out, pass through the gate, and go out by it. So their king goes on before them, and the Lord is at their head. Now, just backing up here, it says in that verse 6, it says, do not speak out, so they speak out. In other words, the people are saying this. When Micah is declaring things that are going to happen to them, the people are saying, hey, don't harp on all the negative. Don't be such a killjoy. Don't be such a puddle glum. Don't be such a negative person. We don't want to hear all this gloom and doom. That's basically what they're saying, right? Well, it says here, do not speak out, so they speak out. But if they do not speak out concerning these things, reproaches will not be turned back. In other words, if Micah doesn't, get these people to hear his message, if he doesn't speak out, how else are they going to turn around? The unfortunate thing today is how many people are speaking out in the pulpits today? How many people? It's a shame. It's a shame that you don't have a Micah in every pulpit today in the land, because that's what we need more than anything else. I really believe it. It's some hellfire and brimstone. These people pounding the pulpit and saying, hey, man, we are this close to being dragged behind the woodshed and beat within an inch of our life. We have to repent. We got to quit messing around. But who's speaking out? And even the people that do speak out, they are labeled as, fanatical, they're labeled as extremists, as dangerous. Anybody that speaks out against sin is going to be running out of town on a rail. But it's saying here, if they do not speak out concerning these things, reproaches will not be turned back. Well, who's speaking out? The few people that are speaking out, they're not making much progress. Mm-hmm. Then it says in verse 7, it is being said, O house of Jacob, is the spirit of the Lord impatient? Are these his doings? What Micah is saying, people are responding, saying, hey, man, God's not going to be like that. God's not going to do that. God is loving and he's kind and he's merciful and he's long-suffering. He's patient. He's to all these things. He's not going to come down on us. We are his people. Mm-hmm. That's what they're saying, right? Mm-hmm. Well, how many people fall into that category today saying, hey, there's no way. We're not going to be destroyed. We're not going to be chastised. We're not going to be punished by God because God is loving and merciful and kind and everything else. Especially some of the worst sinners are saying this. Well, he's saying that's exactly what they were saying then. Like God says, do not my words do good to the one walking upright? In other words, mm-hmm. God's saying this. Okay, I'm going to punish the sinner. But if you obey me, then you'll be blessed. It's that simple. But if you're not going to obey me, hey, don't deceive yourself. Don't be deluded. I will punish you. I will take you and beat you within an inch of your life. That's what he's saying. And verse 8, recently my people have arisen as an enemy. You stripped the robe off a fellow Israelite from unsuspecting passersby, from those returning from war. In other words, they're exploiting people who are in most need of assistance. He's talking about a fellow Israelite, people, unsuspecting passersby, and other strangers who are being exploited or taken advantage of. those returning from war, I mean, they're the ones who, they don't really have anything. They've, given all they had for their country, and now they got to start anew, but they're being taken advantage of. I mean, they're being just exploited. And you can see that in this country. I mean, look, for example, the credit cards. People who get behind the eight ball with the credit card interest rate is around 22%. It's just outrageous. And the people who need the money the most are usually the ones that end up having to pay that. Usually if you have good credit, you can say, I don't need this, and they'll be sending you something where you get the low APR or stuff like that. I don't want to get off on a tangent. I'm just simply saying it's usually the ones who are most in need of assistance to get taken advantage of, get taken to the cleaners. And then verse 9 says, the women of my people who you evict, each one from her pleasant house, and from her children you take my splendor forever. Arise and go, for this is no place of rest because of the uncleanliness that brings on destruction, a painful destruction. In other words, what would very often happen back then was these so-called pious people who claimed to believe in God, if the husband or the father, the head of the household, if he was to die, if he was to become sick, if he was to become ill, if he was to be killed in war, the creditors would immediately run in and say, hey, your husband owes me X amount of dollars, or he owes me this amount of money, or whatever. And he's saying, hey, we're confiscating your house. You're out of here. Throwing out the wife, the mother, and the kids. And they're just out on the street. Totally taking advantage of these people. And this is why God says, hey, you know, you are going to get it for this kind of exploitation of other people. He says, arise and go, for this is no place of rest because of the uncleanliness that brings on destruction, a painful destruction. He says, arise and go. He says, you're the one that's going to be expelled. You're the one that's going to be evicted. You're the one that's going to be thrown out. You've done this to other people, and now it's going to happen to you. You're going to be thrown out of this land. See, that's God's poetic justice. And while I'm reading this, I don't want to beat this to death, but it's going to come around again and again and again when we read the book of Micah, is if God has such poetic justice, you know, innocent people were thrown out and evicted from their homes so that these greedy good-for-nothings could grab everything they could from needy people, and God's going to now evict them. He's going to throw them out of the land. Mm-hmm. Well, just stop and think for a minute. What's he going to do to this nation because of the 40 million of slaughtered unborn children? Do you think we're going to get away with that? Wait till that comes full circle. I'll deal with that in just a minute. It says in verse 11, if a man walking after wind and falsehood has told lies and said, I will speak out to you concerning wine and liquor, he would be a spokesman to this people. In other words, the religious leaders of those days, if you would ask him to either give you a blessing or to prophesy in regards to your future, if you gave him, let's say, a hefty or substantial monetary gift, or even animals that he could for his herds, for his flocks, or for his table, for his food, whatever, then he'd prophesy for you in a very positive way. All right? Mm-hmm. Stop and think for a minute. This isn't too far removed from where we are today. It's talking here of a man walking after wind and falsehood. Let me just put there, if a politician walking after wind and falsehood had told lies and said, I will speak out to you concerning whatever you want to hear, okay, he would be the spokesman to this people. Why? Because, just to say, the special interest groups, they go to these politicians with plenty of money, and they say, you know, we want you to vote this particular way or that particular way. Well, then they're going to vote favorably, right? Because they're given this money from special interest groups. They have no real backbone when it comes to what's right. It's, where's the money coming from? If you pay me, if you give me enough money, I will vote favorably for what you want.
Do you really think that about everyone?
A good 90%. Verse 12, I will surely assemble all of you, Jacob, and I will surely gather the remnant of Israel, and I put them together like sheep in a fold, like a flock in the midst of its pasture, and they will be a noisy with men. The breakers go up before them. They break out, pass through the gate, and go out by it. So their king goes on before them, and the Lord is at their head. He's talking about here gathering a remnant of Israel. once he deals with Israel and destroys all these wicked people, Micah is actually jumping forward to the end of the age, to when Christ comes back and sets up the millennial kingdom. You see how these prophets do this? He's talking about the destruction of Jerusalem, destruction of the northern tribes of Israel and the southern tribes of Israel. But then he says that there will be a remnant left. Look at that verse 12. I will surely assemble all of you, Jacob, and I will surely gather the remnant of Israel, the few that are left, and what I will put them together like sheep in the fold. He will be the shepherd. They will be like sheep in the fold, like a flock in the midst of a pasture. He's going to provide for them, care for them. He's going to be the good shepherd. And he says, and they will be noisy with men. In other words, they will be rejoicing. They will be exalting. They will be, you know, they will just be beside themselves with joy because Christ will be ruling and reigning over them. Because it says the breaker goes up before them, they break out, pass through the gate, and go out by it. So their king goes on before them, and the Lord is at their head. In other words, there's coming a day, and after all this judgment is brought on God's people, that they are the ones who are going to emerge victorious. The humble, the small remnant of God's people who remain faithful and true and obedient to Him. You know, Christ is going to be their king, and He's going to be at their head. See what I mean about these prophets? It's like again and again they talk about a near judgment and a future judgment. They talk about you could see that even with like Christ's first and second coming. Sometimes they talk about it in the same chapter, sometimes in the same verse. You got to be able to distinguish whether this is an immediate judgment or a future judgment, and that's what he's dealing with here. He goes from the destruction of his people to the final victory that Christ will have when he's ruling and reigning over his people. Anybody have anything you want to add or share to what we read there? Okay, let's just read this chapter 3, and then we're going to go ahead and close tonight. Chapter 3, it says, And I said, hear now, heads of Jacob and rulers of the house of Israel, is it not for you to know justice, you who hate good and love evil, who tear off the skins from them and their flesh from their bones, and you eat the flesh of my people and strip off their skin from them and break their bones and chop them up as for the pot and as meat for the kettle. It says, then they will cry out to the Lord, but he will not answer them. Instead, he will hide his face from them at a time because they have practiced evil deeds. Excuse me. Now, look at who's he addressing this to. He says, hear now, heads of Jacob and rulers of the house of Israel. Is it not for you to know justice? Now he's dealing with the politicians and the religious leaders. Now, I've said this 1,000 times, I'll say it 1,000 times again. Our leaders are a mere reflection of the people. This is what it boils down to. God is dealing with the people in charge, people that are in positions of leadership. He's addressing them, the heads of Jacob and the rulers of the house of Israel. Is it not for you to know justice? You who hate good and love evil, who tear... Okay, this is where we're at today, isn't it? Isn't this what Isaiah talked about? I believe it was in Isaiah chapter 5 when he talked about, woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who substitute darkness for light and light for darkness, who substitute bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe to those who are wise in their own eyes and clever in their own sight. Woe to those who are heroes and drinking wine and valiant men and mixing strong drink, who justify the wicked for a bribe and take away the rights of the ones who are in the right. I mean, this is where we are at today. God says, Isaiah 5:20. This is where we are at today. You know, where people are calling good evil and evil good. And he says here in that verse 2, it says, you hate good and love evil, who tear off the skin from them and tear their flesh from their bones, who eat the flesh of my people, who strip off their skin from them and break their bones and chop them up as for the pot, and as meat for a kettle. Now, obviously, the people weren't acting as cannibals, literal cannibals. However, this is the way God seen them spiritually, morally. Okay, that they would just take advantage of other people. In other words, read this, and I'll make two applications from it. Okay, he says, you tear off the skin from them, from the flesh of their bones, and eat their flesh from my people, and strip off their skin from them, and break their bones, and chop them up in a pot. I'll give you an example. Look at when there's a notorious killer, like this Richard Allen Davis. Remember, he was the one who took Paula Glass out of her home?
Don't get too graphic.
Okay, and we all know what happened to her. Mm-hmm. Well, where is this guy today? Okay, what I'm saying is, who's paying for this? Mm-hmm. For the endless appeals, endless appeals, endless appeals. You know, year. How many years ago was that?
Yeah.
And how about this? The Night Stalker, Richard Ramirez. I'm talking about like 20 years ago, 15 yeah. years ago. Remember him running around, killed 13 people, was in all kinds of witchcraft. He's still around, isn't he? He's still. Last I heard, a number of years ago, they allowed him to get married in prison. Mm-hmm. Now. Is this not what he's referring to and things like this? In other words, who's paying for this? It is the taxpayers being forced to pay for this kind of injustice, this kind of stupidity, this kind of, you know, ridiculous, asinine form of justice. Who is getting rich off of these guys lounging around in prison? The lawyers, the judges. Appeal after appeal after appeal. Read it again. You hate good and love evil who tear off the skin from them and their flesh from their bones and who eat the flesh of my people and strip off their skin from them and break their bones and chop them up as for a pot, as meat for a kettle. Now, granted, he's being symbolic in here, but you can make that application. Then you can make a literal interpretation of this today. And that's when it comes to unborn children. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get too graphic here, okay? Because little kids here, but you read that, hey, you can take that literal. You can take that literal as far as this country's concerned. Our evil far exceeds what their evil was. In verse 4, then they will cry out to the Lord, but he will not answer them. Instead, he will hide his face from them at that time because they have practiced evil deeds. Well, when, you know, the judgment falls, people are going to be turning to God, but is God going to hear? Is he going to answer? Well, no. And in verse 5, it says, thus saith the Lord concerning the prophets who lead my people astray. When they have something to bite with their teeth, they cry peace. But against him who puts nothing in their mouths, they declare holy war. He's talking about the prophets now. But also, the prophets are the leaders. Like I said, when it comes to the political leaders, if you've got money to throw into their campaign fund, then they'll give you an ear. But if you haven't got anything to give them, forget it. And like I say, I mean, if I can guarantee you, if the unborn of this country had a lobby that was just filthy rich, you would see a complete turnaround of all of these policies. So it has nothing to do with a person's, you know, moral convictions. It's always, you know, who's got the most money. I can almost guarantee you. But here he's talking about the prophets who lead my people astray when they have something to bite with their teeth and they cry peace. But against him who puts nothing in their mouths, they declare holy war. Therefore, it will be night for you without vision, a darkness for you without divination. The sun will go down on the prophets and the day will become dark over them. The seers will be ashamed and the diviners will be embarrassed. Indeed, they will all cover their mouths because there is no answer from God. This is very interesting to me because this is what happened to these prophets. I believe a lot of these prophets started out as godly people. But in time, they made a racket out of it. How many people start out good in a religious life, I don't care, ministers, pastors, priests, or whatever, and then they end up becoming so corrupt? Well, he's saying this is what happened to these prophets. As they started out prophesying, you know, in the name of God, and then they ended up taking bribes from these people. And then so God says to them, hey, the sun is going to go down on the prophets. That there's not going to be a word from them. Read it again. Therefore, it will be night for you without vision, a darkness for you without divination. The sun will go down on the prophets, and the day will become dark over them. The seers will be ashamed, and the diviners will be embarrassed. Indeed, they will all cover their mouths, because there is no answer from God. Who was the last Old Testament prophet?
Malachi.
Very good. He prophesied over 400 years before the birth of Christ. After Malachi, for over 400 years, there was nothing, not a sound from God to these people. Mm-hmm. Read it again. Therefore, it will be night for you without vision and darkness for you without divination. The sun will go down on the prophets and the day will become dark over them. The seers will be ashamed and the diviners will be embarrassed. Indeed, they will cover their mouths because there is no answer from God. After Malachi, for 400 years, 450 years, There was dead silence until John the Baptist came on the scene.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. This is one of the judgments that these people, you know, are not going to speak out for God, then they're going to have nothing to say on behalf of God. This is the shame. This is the shame to me, is that when you have pastors, ministers, and priests in the pulpit week after week who want to water down their message to suit the people, to give them a social gospel, to give them this crap that I'm okay and you're okay and everybody's fine kind of nonsense, instead of standing up and speaking the word of God, well, then God's not going to have a word to speak through them. And that's unfortunately what's happening in this nation today. And you know, sometimes we need to just get a grip on what's happening around us.
Mm-hmm.
And the false prophets, the false teachers, the false messiahs are coming out of the woodwork just like Jesus said they would do, to mislead many, if possible, even the elect, even Christians, can be sucked in by these false prophets. That's why you need God's word to test them. And verse 8 says, on the other hand, I am filled with power, with the Spirit of the Lord, with justice and courage to make known to Jacob his rebellious acts, even to Israel his sin. Now, this is the difference between a false prophet and a true prophet.
Mm-hmm.
This is Micah speaking here. Let me read this verse 8 again, because this applies to a true prophet of God. On the other hand, I am filled with power, with the Spirit of the Lord, and with justice and courage to make known to Jacob his rebellious acts, even to Israel his sin. That's what it takes to stand up in the pulpit and make known the rebellious acts of this nation and the sins of the people. But you stand up in a pulpit today and say, hey, look, homosexuality is a sin. And if you don't repent of that, you're going to come under damnation, eternal damnation. Say that. Say that. Oh, man, you are going to be running out of town on a rail. You are going to be labeled a fanatical. Or you're going to be labeled hateful, spiteful, bigoted, homophobic, extremist, dangerous. The list goes on and on, doesn't it?
It's going to get worse, too.
Huh?
It's going to get worse.
Oh, right. Right. But look what it's saying here. With justice and courage to make known to Jacob his rebellious acts, even to Israel his sin. Stand up in a pulpit and say that today. Oh, man, are you going to be lambasted? Oh, there isn't a politician in this country who's got the guts to stand up and say this. Not that I know of. Huh? Right. Well, Micah said, hey, on the other hand, I'm filled with power and the Spirit of the Lord. You can almost tell a person's filled with, you know, when they come out and they got the courage and they got the guts to stand up and say, hey, this is wrong.
What is this big, huge fascination with that particular area of sin,
yeah,
which God finds so offensive?
Right.
It's
well,
like everybody's running headlong after it, you know.
Well, that's well, if you look at Sodom and Gomorrah,
yeah,
I mean, that's
exactly.
This is what happens. It's like we've gotten to the point now. We're calling good evil and evil good.
Good.
You see, one thing about the homosexual sin is that, hey, if you're homosexual, as far as I'm concerned, hey, that's between you and God. The problem is, in our country today, mm-hmm. it's no longer between the individual and God.
Mm-hmm.
It's they are out, they are in your face, in your mm-hmm. face, in your face. And if you say, hey, mm-hmm. man, I don't agree with that, then they just come down on you like a ton of bricks.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. It's like it was in the day of Sodom and Gomorrah. And that's mm-hmm. what Jesus said it would be like. In the end times, mm-hmm. he said it would be like, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, and it would be like the days of Lot, when eating and drinking and marrying, giving into marriage. They didn't know, you know, the day that they came down on top of them. Well, Jesus said it would be like the days of Sodom and Gomorrah. What made Sodom and Gomorrah so bad? It wasn't just the people who engaged in the sin. It was that the leaders at the time gave them license, legalized this.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I mean. Everything's been legalized. And he says here in verse 9, he says, now hear this, heads of Jacob and rulers of the house of Israel, who abhor justice and twist everything that is straight. Oh, is this not our judicial system today? Is this not our lawyers today?
Yeah.
Read that again. Hear now, O heads of the house of Jacob. In other words, these are politicians, O rulers of the house of Israel, who abhor justice and twist everything that is straight. I mean, leave it to a lawyer to twist everything
right.
that is straight. Isn't that right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, twist and distort and pervert and deny the truth. They are the ones who are primarily responsible for the moral disintegration of this nation. I guarantee it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's any accident mm-hmm. that every judge is a lawyer and virtually every politician is a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 90% of politicians. It's like these are the people who are most responsible for the moral disintegration of this nation. Well, let's just wind this down, okay? Is it verse 10 says, who built Zion with bloodshed. In other words, Zion is another name for God's people. Zion is Jerusalem. Who built Zion with bloodshed, and Jerusalem with violence and injustice. This nation is being built with bloodshed in the sense that our judicial system and, of course, the murder of the unborn, this is done purely out of convenience sake. And they're always, always, always talking about twisting the truth. They always say, well, what about a woman that's raped? What about a woman who's an incestuous relationship? What about a child that, say, is going to be born handicapped? I would say this, okay? I would say this. It would be wrong to murder that child, but I would say this. If this nation allowed for those three things, mm-hmm. just those three things, if we allowed for that, I think God would be merciful to us. If we just allowed for those three incidents. But do you know how many mm-hmm. abortions that accounts for?
Yeah.
Between 1% and 3%. Mm-hmm. What's the other 95, 97%?
Convenience.
Total convenience. Mm-hmm. And it's an abortion mill. You know, these are money makers. There's no doubt about it. And then, of course, when you use the fetuses for, you know, experimentation and body parts, stuff like that. Well, this is what it's saying here. Who builds Zion with bloodshed and Jerusalem with violent injustice. You know, that's it. That to me, that's such a clear-cut application to where we are at today as a nation. And I'm telling you that if God took Jerusalem behind a woodshed and beat him within an inch of his life, he doesn't do it to us. He owes them an apology, as far as I'm concerned. And verse 11, her leaders pronounce judgment for a bribe. That's our politicians. If you donate to their campaign fund, if you're a lobbyist who got plenty of money to shower upon them, then they're going to vote your way. Is that right? Jerusalem, it says, her leaders pronounce judgment for a bribe. Her priests instruct for a price. I mean, even her religious leaders got into the act. I mean, even today, I mean, I've never felt set well with me when pastors, ministers, priests expect money for weddings or funerals and things like this. That's between them and God. But I just say, hey, man, that's your job. Why should we have to pay extra for that? But, you know, I don't want to get off on tangent like that. I'm just simply saying, hey, you know, do your job. I mean, forget this money business. It says, and her prophets divine for money. I mean, that's where we're at today. Look at our so-called prophets today. I mean, these so-called fortune tellers, diviners, these people are supposed to predict the future. I mean, if you look at, pick up any tabloid magazine, count the number of advertisements in there for fortune tellers, for mm-hmm. diviners, for people who will tell you their future. But it's all for money. It's all for money. It says, her priests instruct for a price, her prophets divine for money. Yet they lean on the Lord, saying, is not the Lord in our midst? Calamity will not come upon us. Is that this country or not? Mm-hmm. We're doing all this wickedness, all this sin, and all this evil, and we're saying, hey, you know, God's with us. God bless America. God's not going to allow this nation to be destroyed. You know, there's that false sense of security. How many people are hearing this from the pulpit week in and week out? The same thing, week in and week out. I'm okay, you're okay. I mean, I was sitting in my own church, you know, last Sunday. I mean, I have to pray that God will anoint the guy's words. Because I just feel like, man, you're putting everybody to sleep. We need a fire lit under us. But, you know, I don't want to be judgmental or critical or self-righteous. But I just think, man, this is not the message. You know. And verse 12, therefore, on account of you, Zion will be plowed as a field. Jerusalem will become a heap of ruins, and the mountains of the temple will become high places of a forest. What he's saying there, and this is fulfilled right to a T, therefore, on account of you, account of the people, account of the leaders, account of the, you know, the politicians and the spiritual leaders and the judges, because of you, Zion will be plowed as a field. In other words, Jerusalem and God's people, they're going to be completely plowed as a field. God's going to deal with all of them. And he says here, Jerusalem will become a heap of ruins, which it did. In 586 B.C., Nebuchadnezzar went down there and completely demolished the temple. And it says, and the mountains of the temple will become a high place of a forest. In other words, remember, how long were the people of Israel in Babylon as a judgment? They were there for 70 years, and God arrived at that figure because, you know, remember, he gave them specific instructions on the law of Moses, that every seventh year was a sabbatical year. They would allow the ground to rest, to lie fallow for a whole year, so they could rejuvenate itself. And God says, on the sixth year, I'll give you a bumper crop. On the seventh year, you are to just put your faith in me, and you'll have enough to carry you over. Well, people never listened to God. They didn't allow the land to rest. And 490 years later, God says, well, I've been keeping tabs the whole time. You guys didn't think I cared, or you guys didn't think I would notice. Well, the land is going to now have its Sabbath. And for 70 years, the land lay fallow. And it says here that the mountain of Jerusalem, in other words, where the temple was, it got overgrown with trees and bushes and thorns and nestles and everything else. It became a forest, just exactly the way Micah predicted. And we may think, hey, God, he's just completely indifferent to this, the murder of 40 million unborn children, because he hasn't done anything yet. Well, I guarantee you, he has kept an explicit record of every child that's been killed. And he's going to come back on us a hundredfold. I guarantee it.